The numbers are out. Our March release of consumer price index expected up 0.2% is up 0.1%.
Inflation is up 5% from a year ago, new data out this morning shows, but it has slowed to its lowest level in 2 years. We have a good understanding of what causes inflation. Too much money chasing too few goods is the Econ 101 explanation. And of course, when supply chains break down, as they did during the pandemic, that'll contribute too. But you may have felt recently that things are more expensive than they should be. That the crisis created by the pandemic is coming to a close, but prices are still very high. Two econ writers recently dug into the question of whether regular old inflation is the reason for all of the higher prices, or whether something else is going on.
There seems to be a reluctance on the part of businesses to start to bring prices down.
Coming up on Today Explained, the hidden drivers of inflation. Support for Jay Explained comes from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. If you like spy thrillers or indeed Elizabeth Moss, then you might want to check out FX's The Veil. It's an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. Oh, I'll go. One woman has a secret, same here, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
I think we can all agree the current political moment is fraught. But how does it compare to the other fraught political moments in history?
It felt for a time in part of that decade like everything was falling apart. Young people against old people, anti-war violence, peace movement.
I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. And this week, presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about difficult times in America's history and how its people overcame them. The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Tracy Alloway. I am the co-host of the Odd Lots podcast over at Bloomberg, where myself and my co-host Joe Weisenthal talk about the most interesting stories in finance, markets, and the economy.
You recently identified a phenomenon or wrote about a phenomenon that you call excuseflation. It does not roll off the tongue, but it's an interesting idea. Tell me what it means.
I think a lot of people at this point have heard about this idea that companies, you know, maybe they're taking advantage of the current environment in order to raise prices and really gouging their customers. And the thing about excuseflation is it's sort of grounded in truth. It's the idea that companies are using these once-in-a-lifetime disruptions. You know, think about the supply chain hiccups that we've had.
The Port of Los Angeles is once again seeing bottlenecks.
Think about the Ukraine-Russia war.
Well, the conflict in Ukraine and the sanctions on Russia have led to another surge in the cost of oil and gas.
And they're using those one-off disruptions as an excuse to raise prices. And that sounds fair enough. You know, companies, they have expenses. If their input costs go up, maybe it makes sense for them to pass some of those on to customers. But where it starts to become insidious is when they're raising prices so much that they're seeing their profits go up quite substantially as well.
Can you give me an example of something that has been excuseflated?
Sure. So one of my favorite examples, because, you know, I love these personally, but chicken wings. Let's talk about chicken wings and Wingstop.
You want to order Wingstop?
We just got all these groceries.
Yeah, but we didn't get Wingstop.
You know you want that sauced and tossed Wingstop, where flavor gets its wings.
Wingstop is a very large purveyor of very delicious chicken wings. And what they've been saying on their earnings calls is that they have been raising their prices for their delicious chicken wings. And the reason they've been doing that is because the wholesale cost of your basic chicken wing went up quite a lot during the pandemic.
Whether you're serving them up from the deep fryer or selling them raw, chicken wings are hard to come by right now.
I've been raising my wing prices every week for the last 5 weeks.
We had a lot of disruptions at various farms, chicken farms, with labor shortages and things like that. So it made sense that chicken wing prices went up and the company started passing those on to consumers. The issue now, though, is that we have seen a substantial drop in chicken wing prices.
Good news for you, just in time for football season. Chicken wing prices have now dropped to below their pre-pandemic levels. The wholesale price is now at a four-year low.
And yet the company isn't saying that it's going to start dropping its prices. What it's discovered, much like a lot of other businesses at the moment, is that actually this strategy of making up what you lose in sales volume with higher prices, so you're selling fewer products, but you're selling them at higher prices, it's a viable strategy in the current environment, and it's working for a lot of companies because profit margins are up.
Wingstop is coming off a better-than-expected quarter for sales as diners embrace the company's new chicken sandwich. It also helps from a profit perspective that chicken wing prices have started to, or they have flown lower.
I mean, listen, you are an economics reporter. You see what's happening. You are still buying chicken wings. Why are you not furious? Why have you not put your foot down?
First of all, let me say that my personal price elasticity when it comes to chicken wings is probably infinite. I will pay whatever it takes to eat buffalo wings.
Wingstop is listening.
We spoke to the owner of a bakery over in Chicago, and you know, I think there's a tendency when you think about things like greedflation or excuseflation, you think about these big corporations, these really sophisticated corporations that are, you know, formulating their pricing strategies and how to get the most out of customers. But this is a phenomenon that also is endemic in smaller and mid-sized businesses. And this baker in Chicago kind of laid it out for us. He said,
whether it's rye flour or bird flu that impacts eggs, when it makes national news, just running a business, it's an opportunity to increase the prices without getting a whole bunch of complaining from the customers. It's not that we're out there price gouging, but you know, timing can be everything.
Shouldn't competition push prices down? I mean, if I'm a business owner, I'm going to let consumers know that I can get them stuff cheaper than the other guys who have excuseflated everything. Shouldn't that be happening?
So I think this is really the key thing about excuseflation and where it differs a little bit from greedflation. If a company starts raising its prices just because it can, then in theory, according to the basic rules of capitalism and economics, someone should come in and undercut them and steal all their business away. But the thing about excuseflation is it allows companies to raise prices all at the same time and all together. So the economist Isabella Weber, she basically says what it does is it gives companies de facto monopoly power.
If we are in a situation where we have very highly concentrated corporate structures, which I think is a fairly fair description of large parts of the American economy, then we can actually see that the price response to demand is surprisingly small in many cases. And the prices are actually quite surprisingly stable.
So you think about the reason that we tend not to like monopolies as consumers. We want, you know, a vibrant landscape of lots of smaller businesses that are all competing with each other so that we get a better value for our money. What happens when you have an industry-wide event that gives a group of businesses an excuse to raise prices is that they are all effectively, not officially, but effectively acting as a monopoly. They can all say, well, you know, it's bird flu, so we're all going to raise the prices of our eggs. Or when it comes to specific company examples, you know, Pepsi has been pushing their prices higher for a while, and you would think that, well, customers can just buy Coke instead, but actually Coke is pretty much doing the same thing. And so you end up having these industries who are all acting together. And that means that there's very little incentive for them to start lowering prices because they're not seeing that competitive pressure. We tend to think of monopoly power as this, you know, kind of static thing. So, you know, you might have one big company that dominates an industry, and that's a classic monopoly. Consumers don't have a lot of other options. But in fact, monopoly power can be a fluid and temporary thing. So when you see a supply bottleneck or when you see an industry-wide disruption, it can lead to this situation where companies all start acting very similarly. They all start doing the same thing. It's almost, you know, I hesitate to use these words because they have legal connotations, but it's almost like a de facto cartel, right? Everyone decides to raise their prices all at once because whatever crucial component or input cost is going up. And so that leads to an automatic monopoly. It feels the same to a consumer who finds that actually they don't have a lot of options because one group of businesses is raising their prices all together, all at the same time.
The Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates to try and slow inflation down. Does the Fed take corporate profits into account? Is the Fed looking at this and saying, huh, we might need to try something new to tame inflation other than our standard raising interest rates? If it's a new set of circumstances, does the Fed need a new response?
I think it would be really, really hard for the Fed with its current mandate to take something like corporate profits into account.
Huh.
We have seen policymakers, make some noises about this. I think Lael Brainard, for instance, before she left to go to the National Economic Council, was talking about how it seems like there is this sort of inelastic component of consumer demand that maybe companies are taking advantage of. But what I would point to is there are other types of policymakers who are starting to cast a much more critical eye on this type of activity. For instance, we're talking about supply side disruptions. There is a lot of legislation that has come out of the Biden administration that is targeted at precisely these types of choke points.
After weeks of negotiation and working with my team and with the major union retailers and freight movers, The Port of Los Angeles announced today that it's going to begin operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
The second thing we know is that throughout the pandemic and the, you know, ensuing years, the rich have gotten richer and the poor have gotten poorer. They've blown through their savings while wealthier people have tended to see their savings just go up. So you almost have, you do have two different classes of people here. You have one class of people that is probably feeling the pressure of higher inflation. They're not going to be buying as many chicken wings, but you have other people who, you know, they will stomach and possibly not even notice a 10 or 20% increase in the price of their chicken wings. And so I think those are the things that are really driving this dynamic.
Bloomberg's Tracy Alloway, co-host of Odd Lots, the podcast. Coming up next, how companies justify these price increases. You want to know what premiumization means? Like Wingstop, we'll deliver. Support for Today Explained comes from Mint Mobile. Sometimes you see a really good sale, a really good deal, and you think, huh, what's the catch? You may be used to seeing quote-unquote great deals from overpriced wireless providers and thinking, what's the catch? With Mint Mobile, they say, there is no catch. For a limited time, their wireless plans are just $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, you can go to mintmobile.com/explained. That's mintmobile.com/explained. You could cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/explained. $45 upfront payment is required. That's equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 GB on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Support for Jay Explained comes from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. If you like spy thrillers or indeed Elizabeth Moss, then you might want to check out FX's The Veil. It's an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. Oh, I'll go. One woman has a secret, same here, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. Okay, moments ago, excuselation. Now, Jason Carrion, the business news director at the New York Times, recently identified another reason: gentrification, not of a neighborhood, but of the whole economy. Jason, what?
My co-author and I, we thought of gentrification as like an understandable metaphor for what companies are doing now, in that they're prodding consumers towards fancier, often pricier versions of their products. And so as those products grow more exclusive and expensive, we thought of gentrification as that metaphor, as if it was the entire economy being gentrified. And what that implies is that it caters to higher income consumers and leaves poorer people underserved. Now, what corporate executives will call that is premiumization, which is a mouthful.
There's probably two big drivers, I think, that have driven this premiumization over the last two decades, and why I'm very bullish that premiumization will continue.
And that's been coming up more and more when we talk to CEOs and CFOs and those types. And also if you listen in on earnings calls, these calls that companies have with investors and analysts every quarter, it's fair to say that premiumization is a pretty popular buzzword right now.
If you were to ask an executive, give me a one-sentence definition for premiumization, what would they say?
Well, they would say that it's increasing the value of a product to a consumer beyond what it costs. So, you know, it's like adding new features, having some sort of branding that makes it more desirable in some ways, and that's several sentences. But really, it's they talk about value beyond just price.
Got it. Okay, so earlier in the show, we were talking to Tracy Alloway about excuseflation. And this is where companies will jack up the price for reasons that don't have to do with input costs. But in this case, companies are jacking up the prices and saying higher quality is what justifies the increase. Can you give me like a really specific example of where you have seen this happening?
How much time do we have here? Because it's happening everywhere. And I think once you start to think about premiumization, excuseflation, or just look at, you know, the price of things now versus 3 or 4 years ago, you start to see it everywhere. And, you know, one recent example that's pretty interesting, I think, is at AMC, the movie theater chain.
Somehow, heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
They started raising prices for, you know, middle seats.
The plan is to offer three tiers of seating. Preferred tier seats in the middle of the theater will be the most expensive, followed by standard, the most common choice, which the company says will remain the price of a traditional ticket. If you're in the mood for a bargain and don't mind a slight neck cramp, try value, located in the front rows.
The thing that really convinced us that it was time to write this story about this phenomenon was when we saw executives at WD-40 mention premiumization.
And what did they say?
You know, WD-40, the lubricant that you use to fix squeaky wheels, hinges, doors, all that sort of thing.
WD-40. Pick up a can at your favorite store. Try it. WD-40.
They have been talking about premiumization as part of their strategy and what's driving profits there. And that's not something, you know, you generally consider as like a luxury good, but they have, you know, cans of lubricant now with what they call a smart straw.
Flip it up for a precision stream. This will get to those hard to reach places. Flip that straw back down for regular spray action.
And they also have something called easy reach, which means that you can shoot WD-40 around corners.
And the best part, the straw is right where I left it.
And what that means is that they can charge more for each bottle of lubricant. They say that it's because, you know, hey, these shoot two different ways, and so that's worth, you know, an extra quarter or 50 cents or something on a bottle. And so once you apply that to other products, you start to see it just about everywhere.
I think you also wrote, and this is very near and dear to my heart, about pet food.
I think pet food is a fascinating example of this, because pet food has been premiumizing, to coin a term there, for many, many years. So that trend has been kind of turbocharged by the pandemic. So what's happening with pet food is that executives in that industry have been talking about the humanization of pet ownership for a while. You know, we treat our dogs, cats, and other pets as akin to human members of our families, and we spend more and more on fancier things for them. And that mainly involves food. And so that humanization trend has run into the kind of pandemic boom in pet ownership, has run into the splurge in spending that we saw during the pandemic when people got stimulus checks, when they were at home and other expenses went down and they decided to spend more on their households, and that includes pets. There was a really funny example recently. The CEO of Smucker, which owns Milk-Bone, he said that,
"We've had some nice success on some of the premiumization in Milk-Bone. Things like taking the biscuits and dipping them and stacking them. There's actually a basically what looks like an Oreo for dogs."
You know, pets don't necessarily eat more than they used to, but we're spending way, way more on pet food than we used to. And that is a part of this long-running premiumization trend that has only gotten deeper over the past 3 years.
I got a pandemic puppy. I love him so much. I started out feeding him kibble, and then he was kind of like turning his nose up at it. So I started buying him the expensive crap, Freshpet. And then in the last month, he started turning his nose up at Freshpet. And now I have to give him freaking human food. He has premiumized me up to Trader Joe's. I'm so pissed.
Dougie's Trader Joe's. I love it. I love it.
I think there's ways in which this could seem niche, right? It's like Noel and a couple thousand other idiots will pay for expensive dog food. But, you know, it's not all through the economy. We get inflation numbers out today. And, you know, you look at those and you say, well, okay, that's the entire economy. Is premiumization playing into these big, broad inflation numbers that we have out this morning?
It could be. It's kind of hard to identify in the big macro stats, but if you talk to any economists, market watchers, analysts, those types, you're starting to hear them talk more and more about profit-led inflation. So inflation has been on a bumpy but steadily downward slope in recent months. And it's been maybe a little stickier than people thought, given that energy prices have come way down, and some of those big spikes we saw earlier in the pandemic have moderated. And what's left is profits, is companies' profit margins. And so some of the inflation that we see now, and you know, some people have tried to put a number on it, but a not insignificant amount of it is down to companies just keeping prices high, quite simply.
In this kind of dynamic, in this kind of environment, what happens? What does this mean for lower income people who can't afford gentrified WD-40?
What it does mean is that there's a real risk that lower income households are underserved in this new type of economy. And that just puts into, you know, even sharper relief the inequality that we've seen for quite some time in most Western economies. And the car market is a really good example of this. We ran some numbers on it. We talked to some people. At the end of 2017, there were almost 30 different new car models that you could buy below $25,000. The share of cars that cost that much or less, so kind of like lower end new cars, were more than 10% of all sales of cars. Now, there are only about 10 models that cost $25,000 or less, and the share of sales of those cars is like 4%. It's tiny. Car sales have been pretty robust lately, some pretty perky numbers out there, but there are a big swath of people out there who are being completely priced out of the new car market. And that then filters down to the used car market, and so prices will go up there also. And then just generally, you start to picture this economy that is potentially a little bit more unequal than it has been. And it's already pretty unequal. And you get a vision of an economy that's has lower production, potentially higher inflation, and then over the longer term, just a permanently higher prices for essentials and luxuries and just about everything.
What are the longer term consequences of this two-track economy, do you think?
Well, it just puts in pretty sharp relief the inequality of it. And, you know, when you get inequality, what that could mean, you know, macroeconomically speaking, is less stability for the economic system, but also for just society as a whole. And that feeds into politics and sort of other things. And so it's not necessarily a bright picture for the economy, but like so much else in this post-pandemic economy, it's confusing. And that's what we've heard from lots of different economists too. They're seeing this, can this continue? are there stability concerns with this? What does it mean for inequality? What does it mean for our politics in the future? And a lot of them honestly just kind of throw their hands up because, like so much else, since we learned of COVID-19, this is having effects that are difficult to predict, and it's kind of uncertain where we're going.
Today's show was produced by Miles Bryan, who will pay a premium for... Miles, tell me.
I will pay a premium for airline tickets that avoid layovers. I hate layovers.
It was edited by Matthew Collette, who will pay a premium for socks. So, Haynes, just know he's out there. It was engineered by City Kid Paul Robert Mounsey, who will pay top dollar for great produce. And it was fact-checked by Laura Bullard, who, believe it or not, but you should believe it because she's the fact-checker, will pay a premium for that special WD-40 that can shoot around corners. I'm Noelle King. It's Today Explained.